Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Learning Pod Network, brought to you by Impact Connections, where we'll be taking a deep dive into the new world of learning pods that are driving educational innovation around the world. I'm your host, Steve Eno. The world has been changed forever by COVID-19. Right now, families and schools around the country are trying to figure out the best way forward without much support. That is why we have created the Impact Connections Learning Pod Network. We believe small group learning, driven by family needs and supported through a network of strong relationships, can improve education for everyone in this moment and beyond. On this podcast, we'll bring you advice from innovative educators and experts to help you create the best learning experience possible. To stay up to date with our latest tools and offerings, please check out our website at www.impactconnections.org. Hi, everyone. Today, we have a very special guest, someone who I've known for almost 30 years. Riley Brady is a close friend of mine who is the type of teacher that I hope my boys get to have one day. Riley puts a huge emphasis on building quality relationships with his students and doing everything he can to help his students succeed. He has dedicated his career to helping special education students get high quality adapted physical education instruction. For 11 years, he has been an adaptive PE specialist and has seen the stark opportunity differences that arise with socioeconomic status. Riley is a great motivator and coach who was able to earn Daily Breeze Coach of the Year honors in his first year as a head coach after leading his water polo team to the school's first CIF championship in 50 years. Riley brings his vast experience as a Division I water polo player, LA County lifeguard, and all-around amazing human to his teaching, which makes him loved by his students and lauded by the community. In this episode, we get a chance to talk about the challenges that teachers are facing during COVID, which has even impacted Riley's endless optimism. But Riley is persevering and gives us great ideas as to how we can support our kids' physical education during these challenging times. I especially love Riley's insights into how we can help every child have small successes to build a passion for physical education. Please enjoy my discussion with the great Riley Brady. Welcome, Riley, to the podcast. How's everything going today?
Going good, man. Happy to be here. Happy to talk to my good longtime buddy.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm super excited to hear all about what your next step on your teaching journey is. So yeah, so tell me about this new gig that you're teaching down in near Carlsbad.
Yeah, so my wife and I, we always wanted to move down to North County, and our plan was this year we were moving. We weren't going to let anything stop us, and then COVID hit and kind of changed the course of everything, but we both agreed just to stay on that path, and I kept looking online for jobs and ended up scoring the first job I applied for, which just happens to be right next to where we wanted to live. So, yeah.
And are you, you're teaching PE or are you teaching adapted PE?
I applied for it's an adapted PE position, which can be really broad because it doesn't specify the grade. It could be anything from preschool all the way up to age 21. And so my particular position is going to be with the more moderate to severe population. And I'm going to have two middle schools on my caseload. It looks like I'll be at one middle school predominantly, but yeah, I'll be working with kids grades 6 through 8 with varying physical and cognitive disabilities and helping them out with PE.
Yeah. And just for our audience, in terms of adapted PE, can you explain a little bit more about what that means? And in terms of the severity level for disabilities, describe that a little bit for everyone.
Yeah. So adapted PE for California is a state mandated related service. And it's for any student who can't safely or successfully access the general physical education curriculum. So it could be they don't have the they may have a cognitive or developmental disability that inhibits their ability to cooperatively participate with the class. It could be a physical disability. Any kid with one of the, there's 13 different disabilities that would qualify you for special education. Any kid with one of those disabilities can qualify for an IEP. Generally speaking, if a PE teacher had a kid who was, you know, they were just having a really hard time finding, making modifications or adaptations to get them to be successful in PE, then they would recommend me to come in and take a look and see if they would qualify for adapted physical education, you know, through the assessment process.
Got it. You do the assessment as well. So you make the determination of whether or not they should be in adapted PE. And how does that usually work out? Is that at the beginning of the year, or do you work with families all throughout the year? Or how does that process usually work out?
So generally, someone would come to me, whether it's the special ed teacher, it could be any gen ed teacher or the PE teacher, and they'd say, hey, would you mind coming to take a look at this kid? He's having a difficult time in PE. So then I would have 30 days to go in and do an informal screening or an observation, and I would just observe the kid either on the playground or in PE. And from there, I would determine, yeah, like it would be a good idea to formally assess this kid. And then we would, and then from there, I would recommend an assessment. The parent would have to agree to it. And then I would have 60 days to go in and assess the kid. We put him through two assessments, and then I would write my assessment report and determine eligibility. The assessments will pretty much dictate where they are age appropriate. Are they, you know, significantly delayed, moderately, average? And then from there, we'd make that determination.
Got it. And you said it was a mandated service for the state of California. You've worked in a few different school districts. I guess on average, is there usually like one or two adaptive PE teachers per district, or is this something that is available for every school, or how does that usually work out?
It all varies on the population inside the school district. So my very first year, I was at LA Unified, which was an awesome experience because there was 160 adaptive PE teachers in the LA Unified school district. And then there was three administrators who were also adaptive PE teachers. So for a first year teacher experience, it was the best because I was getting information and able to collaborate with experienced adaptive PE teachers every day. Whereas when I went to the other school districts, they're smaller, and I was the only adaptive PE teacher in the district. So when you have a question or you want to collaborate, you got to reach out to someone outside the district because there's no one else that really understands what you're doing. And now the new school district I'll be at will be, I think there's six other adaptive PE teachers.
Nice.
So, and for me, adaptive PE is, you got to be creative. That's pretty much what the whole job is. You take what's already adapted, the curriculum, and then you have to make adaptations to make it work for the kids you're working with.
Right. Yeah, I'd love to talk about that a little bit, because obviously with me growing up taking PE, we're used to just go run a mile or go play some volleyball or whatever it was. And obviously my boys are younger, so they've done capture the flag or dodgeball. I don't think they do dodgeball anymore, but they just did some traditional games. What's different about an adapted PE experience that my boys probably wouldn't experience at any of the schools that they've gone to?
It really depends on the model that's being implemented at each school. But for my previous districts, all of the kids I had in middle school generally were mainstream. So they'd be in class with your kids, and I would come and help the PE teacher make adaptations to the curriculum and help other students understand the differences in each kid that might be in their class. But generally, I always say good quality physical education is adapted physical education.
Right.
So, you know, every PE teacher should be an adapted PE teacher as well, in a sense.
Right, right. Yeah, because it sounds like to me, like when you said you got to be flexible, you got to be creative, like you're basically meeting, again, these are special needs students, but you're meeting them where they are. Like you're creating a curriculum specifically for them.
Right.
And that's almost optimal, obviously, for any student to be able to get that type of experience. And so obviously it's a lot harder to do that for every kid, but what practices
that you have as an adapted PE teacher. What do you think other PE teachers could use or should use, or what can parents learn from the way that you go about teaching kids about fitness?
Yeah. So when I'm working with my kids, I'm always in mostly a smaller group setting. So it makes it really, really easy for me to individually make adaptations for the kids. In the general PE setting, when you may have 40 or 50 kids, I think for a lot of PE teachers, it's really easy to focus on the kids that don't need the focus almost because they're the ones having fun. It's really easy to clock in on them. But yeah, in terms of like creating fitness for kids in smaller groups, it's really about finding things that the kids are intrinsically motivated to do and then mixing those in with activities that they hate doing. Because they can't just be doing what they like to do all the time. Otherwise, they'd just be too singularly focused. So yeah, I always do with my kids, I'll start with a warm-up, like a super easy collaborative type warm-up where we're really sometimes just sitting in a circle doing light stretches and communicating, like talking, like asking them questions. And a lot of times my kids, I work with a lot of kids with autism and a lot of kids that maybe haven't had any success in PE. So the second they hear the word PE, they hate it. So I like to start with an easy warm-up. If it's younger kids, I'll do little songs and stuff. But with my middle school kids, I'll get them talking, ask them questions, you know, like basic questions. I don't know. My one question I always ask kids at the start of the year is, give me your perfect day. Like, what's your perfect day? What are you going to do from morning to night? And that'll get you understanding them a little bit. They might say, you know, a favorite movie or something. And that can clue you in on something you can bring up to talk about when you're with them. And then we'll try to do some skill-based stuff, some throwing and catching. After that, we'll do some conditioning or something, something that probably they typically won't want to do as much. And then we'll wash that down with a little game and then close up shop with, again, like a little stretch and chat and drink water, kind of all the basic stuff.
Right.
Try to reinforce, you know, what we just did and then what they could be doing the rest of the day to stay healthy, you know.
Nice. I think that philosophy is great for any parent, any teacher in terms of finding what they're intrinsically motivated to do and then getting them to do things that they don't want to do.
I think you kind of gotta blend it so they don't even know they're doing it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's definitely a great trick with my boys, trying to get them to, whether it's dropping into a quarter pipe for the first time and they're super freaked out, or like going on rollerblades that we got into over the summertime. Yeah, so that's super good advice for parents who may be kind of doing some of this fitness aspect of teaching for the first time during COVID. And so
the other thing I was going to add to that, and it's scaled at different levels for different abilities, but one thing I used last year was little timers and things like that. So like for example, when you're running or something, for my young kids, you could be like, hey, look, when the clock turns red, we're going to run, and it might only be for 10 seconds. And then you say, all right, next week, we're going to do 15 seconds. And so having like little milestones that they can understand and then see like, oh, maybe I have improved a little bit, you know?
Right.
So if you're at home doing PE with your kids, like put things in writing so that the kids can see it, you know, record what you did. It takes 2 seconds to write down what you did and then be able to reference it, you know?
Yeah.
And so when a kid sees at the start of the year he did 5 push-ups and at the end of the year he did 10 or whatever, it's easy to read and say, oh, okay, like that worked, you know?
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And I'm curious, in terms of your experience teaching, and how long have you been teaching now?
This will be my 11th year.
11th year, nice. So in your 11 years of teaching, what have you noticed about the kids that you work with in terms of some of the gaps that most of the kids have in terms of their knowledge of fitness or maybe their needs? Like, have you noticed any trends in terms of kids today versus like maybe kids 10 years ago in terms of their physical fitness or the questions they have or their motivations? And I know, again, you work with a very special population, but I was just curious if you've noticed any trends about where kids need help in terms of their fitness.
It's interesting because I've worked in inner city communities. I've worked in super affluent communities, and it's really easy to see the difference in like nutrition and diet in the lower income communities versus the more affluent communities, and not just diet, but opportunities to exercise and be outdoors and, you know, quality recreation programs. And you can see it in the kids. Like, it's very noticeable in their weight, their general health. You know, when we do the fitness gram, you can see the scores. So there's that. There's working around the gaps economically in different communities. One thing I also find interesting is I went from teaching adapted PE, and then I was doing a little bit of middle school PE, and then I went into high school gen ed PE. And I had these ideas. I was like, all right, I'm going to do like some nutrition, start like a nutrition log. And then someone brought it to my attention. They're like, that's not in the standards at all. And I was like, what? I actually like didn't know. I had to go back and look at the standards. And I went back and looked at the state standards. And there's basically nothing about nutrition or just general health. It's mainly all physical stuff, like understanding why it's important to exercise, understanding different muscle groups, you know, understanding aerobic versus anaerobic, which is all great. But when we're done with PE and we're done with school, like probably, I mean, we know as we get older, like you could exercise all day.
Right. Right.
You're like a pig, like you're right. Going to be fatty.
Yeah. Right. So right.
It's something that's interesting in the PE curriculum that I would like to see adjusted as we move forward, because obviously, I mean, when you speak about it's physical education, but when we're talking about our physical well-being, I mean, it more than anything, it's what we put in our bodies, and that's not talked about almost at all.
Wow. Yeah. I had no idea. Do you know how old are those standards? Do you know when they've last been updated?
I believe they were like adopted or reworked most recently in 2009. So they're old. Okay. Yeah. And through all this COVID stuff, I'm imagining we're going to see a lot of different changes in not just PE, but all grade levels and all subjects.
Yeah. Cause yeah, even when you say like anaerobic versus aerobic, I'm imagining high school kids. I had no idea about that basically until probably a few years ago when I started doing some more serious training and my watch said, oh, this is anaerobic versus aerobic. And I literally had to Google what the difference between aerobic and anaerobic was. And I survived many years without knowing that, playing a lot of different sports. And so it's just fascinating. That's something that a lot of parents probably don't realize, that these standards, even though they've been updated in 2009, are probably out of date, not just for PE, but for every curriculum in terms of what's actually important for kids to learn to be able to survive and thrive in the world today. And so yeah, that's interesting that those, the PE standards are even like that too. So I'd love to dig in a little bit more to your past, your experience as a teacher, because I think you bring a very interesting perspective to the table for our audience. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more about your story in terms of the schools you went to, but I do want to talk about your first year coaching water polo, how you won a CIF championship your very first year, and what lessons you might have learned from that. But yeah, but overall, I'd love to hear your experience in athletics, because you played college water polo at the highest level. You're a lifeguard and a swimmer, so you've done things athletically that most of us haven't. So I'd love to get just a quick rundown on your background and how that influences what you do as a teacher too.
Yeah, I started right out of college. I was coaching high school water polo, and I was the young, super fiery, you don't know what you don't know kind of coach, just out there gunslinging. And I was the assistant coach for 2 years, and then I became the head coach. And the year I was a head coach was one of those years, once every few years, you get a really good senior class. We had a great senior class, and everything just kind of aligned, and we were able to win this CIF championship, which was the first one since 1966 for El Segundo. And it was the first championship, I mean, that I'd won as a player in college. We never won a title. In high school, we didn't win a title. So it was the first time. It was kind of like this culmination of 12 years of water polo and then one great year. And then I kept coaching. I took 1 or 2 years off, and I continued on coaching for about another decade. And as a coach and a teacher, you evolve so much. I went from being like the only thing that mattered was winning to when the game ended, I almost didn't even care who won. All I cared about was like the tiny little victories of like getting that one kid in the game who barely played, and you just teach him how to play defense and blend in. And he got in there and blended in for 2 minutes, and you see a little bit of success in his eyes. And like, that's like, all right, that's all I needed today.
Right.
And then you don't want to lose that competitive fire, but I think it just changes and evolves into, you're a teacher before you're even a coach when you're out there, or at least for me, you're able to separate the wins and losses from the real wins and losses, which are when you get a kid to buy in versus you get a kid to, you know, a loss would be a kid who quits a team or something, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I think one thing I think our parents and the audience would love to hear is what got you into water polo? Because obviously we grew up together. We did a lot of the same sports together. You played more football than I did growing up. Your dad is a football player like my dad. And I still remember, I think it was middle school, I went to a water polo practice with you and our friends, and I almost drowned. And I said, that's enough for me. I'm not playing water polo. I'm curious, what got you into water polo? Because I think a lot of parents probably don't know how to expose their kids to water sports or to water polo and get them interested in that type of sport.
That's a good question. And it leads me into something. I got into it because when a kid gets into a new sport, they need someone to like give them that sense of success. You know what I mean? And I was surfing. All the older guys I knew played water polo, and I was like, okay, I'll give that a try. And I was already a good swimmer, so it was naturally something I picked up faster than a lot of other people. And so when you're having someone say, oh, you're going to be good at this, like as a kid, you're like, I am. Okay, I'm in. So that is something that I always tell parents and something I focus on when I am coaching and working with kids is giving them that sense of success. And every kid's success is going to be different. But like for one kid on the team or one kid in your PE class, it may be running a 5-minute mile. And for the next kid, it might be running a 12-minute mile.
Right.
Or being the best at, you know, dribbling the basketball. Or I don't know. You have to find little things that each kid is good at and embrace them for that. So I always, when I see, and I don't have my own kids yet, but when I, as a parent, I hope, and what I would like to do is introduce them to as many different physical activities as you can and wait till one sticks, you know what I mean? And try to get them to get past that the first couple weeks or months of a new activity when it sucks because you suck at it, like everyone does. We're all white belts when we start a new activity, because the more activities you introduce them to, and kids these days have so many different sports they can play, you know, like water polo's getting bigger. Lacrosse is even making it over to the West Coast. Like there's so many different programs, and just getting your kid involved in as many as you can and then see which one sticks. Cause you know, there's no one size fits all for physical activity.
Right.
And I think variety is the best for that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thank you for that insight. And in terms of your coaching career, you've coached high school, you've coached club water polo, you've coached pretty much all levels, and then you've also taught all levels too. And so can you just give an overview of all the different ages, all the different locations that you've either coached or taught over the last, I guess, couple of decades?
Yeah, I've taught. My first assignment was at LA Unified Adapted PE, and it was all ages. So I worked with kids from elementary, like kindergarten, all the way up to 12th grade. And I'd bounce around all day and work from school to school. And then at El Segundo, I taught middle school PE, and then I was the only adapted PE teacher there. So I had kids that were 3 years old walking onto campus for the first time and getting to see them at 3 years old and then develop them for 5 years. And that was the most rewarding part of that whole job. And then I taught 2 years of high school PE, and now I'll be teaching middle school adapted PE. I'll tell a little story. One of my kids that I had when he was 3 years old, and he had what's called Prader-Willi syndrome. So a lot of times in special ed, you get some of these syndromes, and we're not experts on each specific disability. And so you have to do a little research. And at 3 years old, when he came to school, he couldn't talk at all. He just didn't have the muscle tone, so he kind of would fumble around on his words and but he had this unreal positive energy all the time, like just all the time. His mom told me he'd wake up and he'd open his eyes and the first thing he'd say is like, what do we get to do today? Every day, 365 days a year. And then I got to watch him grow up all the way through elementary school. He started getting involved with our water polo team a little bit at the high school. He'd come and be like our mascot kind of. And then this summer, once a week, he'd come down and go on my workouts with me when I was lifeguarding on the paddle boards. And that's, and from an education standpoint, that's probably the most rewarding part about doing adapted PE is getting to watch the kids develop over time.
Yeah.
You see kids, everyone develops at different levels and speeds, and watching kids go from nonverbal to like kind of like talking to me like I'm an idiot or something because they're so smart now. I'm like, the hell?
Yeah.
It's just that's the best part about education.
Yeah. And that's so awesome. And I think those are definitely the stories that keep teachers, keep all of us doing what we're doing and helping these kids out along the way. That's the amazing stories that really make everything worth it. So that's awesome. So in terms of your experience, obviously this year has been a unique year for many different reasons.
Some would say the worst year.
Some would say the worst year. But yeah, going along with that, like what impact do you think this whole situation is having for the physical fitness, the physical education of kids that either you have been working with from the special education standpoint or just globally? What do you think they're now dealing with now that they haven't been at school? Many of them probably have been on virtual school for a long time. They may not be getting exposed to the physical fitness that they normally do. So yeah, I'm just curious, what do you think what impact is this having on kids?
So I'll say from like I'll start with the physical education standpoint and then I'll talk about the special ed standpoint. From the physical education standpoint, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with the economic and the opportunity gaps from different communities. The kids I was working with at my previous district, they don't have like safe parks to go to and play. And there are a lot of them are in tiny little apartments and they rely on school for meals. They rely on school for fun and they rely on school for their physical activity, their social interactions. And I don't think it's been talked about enough where we can even really quantify how much of an impact that's had negatively. And from a physical education standpoint, obviously in the spring, everything hit us so quick. We got caught with our pants down and no one really knew how to approach it. But generally, like our PE teachers would be sending out weekly videos. Most of them were YouTube videos and things that, because there's so many videos and things like that already out there. It's easy to just take it and put it on your website or your Google Classroom. But PE is physical education and it's supposed to be getting kids to get physically fit. But a big part of that, and probably in my opinion, the biggest part of that is the social aspect. It's the one class it's structured, but it's in a way where kids are going to be interacting socially the entire class period. And you take that out and now there's no way of replacing it through a computer screen, or even if a kid was really committed and came and did every homework assignment you gave them for PE, they're not going to have even a fraction of the same impact that you're going to have in person. That's just speaking of general physical education. When you go into the adapted physical education setting and just a special education setting in general, I mean, it's so difficult for these parents because the parents, like if I want to do live sessions with my kids, the parents got to be there the whole time. And then there's so many other roadblocks to get past. You know, I'm sitting in front of the computer screen like this. So if I do, how many exercises can I do right here with my kids and then still watch them? And so in the spring, I did some Zoom sessions, but honestly, a lot of the parents would say to me, we really appreciate it. We're just so overwhelmed right now. Can you just send us things to do at home? And then you send them lessons. And so for me, and so the special education kids setting and that population is being hurt more than any other population. And I know everyone's hurting from this whole thing, but they need a lot more hands-on attention. They need, for parents that work, Like, it's really easy if you have like a 12-year-old student who's, you know, got his algebra class, his English class, his history class. It's so much easier to say, hey, you've got a Zoom at 8:30, like go get on your Zoom. With the special education population, many of these kids need someone with them the whole time. So a lot of these kids that I work with have a one-on-one aide at school all day. And the aide's not necessarily standing over their shoulder doing their work for them or helping them in every aspect of the day, but they're helping them learn to be independent. And they're making sure that they're, you know, following the curriculum and keeping up with their peers. But when the parents are having to do that from home, I just feel for these parents.
Yeah.
And I really, it's the first week of school, so we're doing all the teacher prep, and I honestly feel like it's a dog and pony show for me. Like, I'm putting up this Google Classroom, I'm putting up all these videos, I'm trying to come up with different ways to reach the kids. But when it comes down to it, is it going to be effective? Is it going to be an effective learning environment? And I'm trying to be optimistic, but I don't feel like what I'm doing right now is as effective as it should be. And it sucks because, you know, I want to reach these kids. Being in a new district too, I don't know these kids.
Right.
I've never met them. I don't know what makes them tick. I don't know what their little quirks are. All I know is what I can read in their reports about them. And that, I mean, you gotta be around a kid to really learn about them. And, you know, it's particularly in the special education population.
Right. Thank you for that insight. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, especially as a new teacher, I think you've made it very clear in everything you've said, relationships drive so much of everything that you do, and in terms of motivation, in terms of helping these kids grow. And it's going to be really hard to replicate that on Zoom, and especially the first time you meet someone. And so I'm curious, what are you doing to start off the new year? What is your school district recommending in terms of setting up your physical education curriculum for the new year?
Yeah, so everything I do is straight off of their IEP. So if their IEP says they get 200 minutes of adaptive PE a week, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And when we write new IEPs for the upcoming school year and the future, we're supposed to be writing them as though the kids are in school. So I'm supposed, like, I look at all my kids, and most of my kids on my caseload right now, it says 200 minutes a week. So it comes down to about 50 minutes a week around there with one shortened period. So I'm supposed to be planning synchronous learning and asynchronous learning. So if they have period one adapted PE, they'd be with me from say 8 to 9. There'd have to be at least 30 minutes of synchronous learning on there. And then the rest, the other 30 minutes could be asynchronous learning. So in theory, if I had a general PE class, I could get the kids on, we could do say 30 minutes of yoga. And then I could say, all right, for the next 30 minutes, you guys could break out into a breakout room and do some sort of project together or something together, and then record it and send it back to me or take notes. For adapted PE, it's going to be tough. I'm going to try to put together and do a lot of just very basic yoga, basic like plyometrics and things I can do right in front of the camera for the parents, introduce them to just some of the basic exercises that most of us know, but maybe don't do as often as we should. In a perfect world, I'll have super involved parents who can be by the computer every period with them. And I don't anticipate that necessarily being the case because people have to work. And so, yeah, hopefully I can get them going with, you know, 30 minutes of instruction with me and then give them activities they can do after. But it's going to be super hard to replicate it in the adapted PE setting. The first 2 weeks, they're saying, we just want to get to know the kids and get to know, help them understand the platforms we'll be using. So everyone's going to be using Google Classroom and Zoom. So hopefully by the end of the 2 weeks, I kind of have an idea of who the kids are, a little bit of personal information on or information that I can use for them in terms of instruction, and then like a routine, you know?
Yeah, and I'm wondering, like, because normally – I remember seeing you walk around the district with a bag of balls and cones and all the equipment. Obviously, in a perfect world, in a non-COVID world, you'd have a budget for all of the equipment that you might need and that you would have with you. obviously you can't really use equipment since everyone's virtual. I guess, is there any budget, and I'm just, again, throwing a random idea out there, was there a budget where you might be able to say, hey, we're going to get all of our adapted PE kids a Fitbit and we're going to have them compete against each other or something like that? Is there a budget for that, or is that something that is kind of still outside possibilities at this point?
Yeah. So as a new guy, they did have that in place. They asked like for an AP adapted PE wish list of equipment, and they were going to send it to each of our kids on our caseload. And the equipment we requested was pretty basic, you know, get each kid like one small ball, each kid one like bigger, like playground ball, some blue tape, like painter's tape, so they could, you know, make little squares to, as targets. And I requested a resistance band for each kid. There was a couple other things on there, but it sounds like the only thing that's come in so far is the blue tape, which is the one thing we don't even really need. It's hard because you don't know what kind of space each kid has, but you try to come up with creative ways for them to play games. Like in the spring, I was doing everybody, when you come to class, you want to bring three sock rolls, you know, like little, and that'll be like our ball and we can use it as a target, and you could play like little like bowling games with it or shooting into the basket, stuff like that. But yeah, it's tough.
Right.
So yeah, that was the goal, is to get every kid equipment. Mm. But
yeah,
that's going to happen in time.
Right, right. The new challenges that we're facing in this world. I'm curious, in terms of the technology, and a lot of our parents may never have been on Google Classroom before, but one piece of tech that I'm curious about, I haven't had a chance to explore, I don't know if you have, but a lot of teenagers and kids are starting to use TikTok every single day, and TikTok's a lot of like dancing and recording yourself. And I was just wondering, do you think that there's any application in physical fitness to use like a recording platform like TikTok for kids to share out and possibly capture some different fitness maneuvers and stuff like that?
Actually a great idea, you know? No, but I mean, dance is part of PE.
Right.
Middle school, every middle school should have at least one dance unit. And yeah, kids are usually super embarrassed to dance, but if they're willing to dance in a camera by themselves, that could be a good physical fitness tool as well. But yeah, having something where the kids could record it and have it, I mean, something they're proud of too, you know, like it doesn't have to be dance. It could be anything, but yeah, a lot of what some PE teachers have done is they're requiring kids to send in videos showing that they were doing the exercises on Google Classroom. So you'd send it in and only the teacher could see it, you know?
Got it. Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's what I'm wondering, how hard that is. Cause obviously the parent would still have to be there recording their kids doing the activity. I mean, maybe some kids could record themselves dribbling a soccer ball or whatever it is.
It'd be tough for my kids, right? Like I said, unless they had super involved parents, because you know, there's most of my kids are getting a variety of different services, and yeah, PE kind of ends up getting pushed by the wayside a little bit with my kids sometimes.
Right. And so just to wrap up some of the things around COVID, in terms of moving forward, like hopefully the things that we have to deal with in terms of virtual school, hopefully that kind of ends sometime soon. But even past COVID, I'm curious, what do you think a perfect physical fitness curriculum, what do you think in a perfect world, what do you wish every kid would have, both in an adapted special education situation and then also in general? What would be your perfect PE curriculum and PE teaching scenario where like you could get kids to do this amount of minutes a day or these types of activities every day? What would you create based on your experiences?
A good healthy balance of physical fitness, cooperative play, which could involve social emotional learning, which is a big thing talked about in education now. And a good balance of not just the fitness, but like games and things like that too, that the kids can be motivated to play. And lastly, some health and nutrition built in there as well. So maybe I bring up social emotional learning because that's something that's going to be implemented a lot more. And there's no better setting for implementing social emotional learning than in the physical fitness classroom, because kids are constantly interacting with different kids and experiencing success and failure, but on a physical level, which for kids can be either be really positive or really embarrassing, or, you know, it can have like lasting impacts on a kid. So perfect setting. Yeah. Just like I said, good balance of social emotional learning, physical cooperative play, and fun.
That's amazing. And I think you brought up something in terms of interacting with different students that I think is super important. And I'm curious, you obviously have managed to have an awesome career in athletics. I think a lot of parents hope that their kids can spend as much time doing physical activities as you do as both a college water polo player, but also now as a lifeguard. I'm curious, as a child, or back to your childhood, what relationships do you remember kind of had the biggest impact on kind of your perception of fitness and nutrition and helped mold you into both the teacher and the person that you are today?
Yeah, I was lucky as a kid, like physical activity was fun for me. That's all I wanted to do. So like the idea of quote unquote exercise didn't even exist in my mind because that's just how I live day to day. And a lot of kids do, but I think for other kids, they need to experience, like we were saying earlier, they need to experience the small successes that will keep them coming back. And all my buddies, we all played sports every day together. It was all I thought about. But for other kids who maybe aren't as into it, I think it's so important to have a good PE teacher who's super positive, super energetic, and really involved in each kid to the best of their ability and just giving those kids a little small successes. You know, I think I heard yesterday someone was saying in one of my meetings, and I really liked the analogy. She was talking about an old teacher she had that said, "Well, I don't care. My job is to come here to teach these kids math, and I don't care if they like it or not. And that's my job, and that's all that matters." And someone made a good point. They're like, "Well, nobody learns from someone they don't like."
Right.
So, they're not going to learn if you don't like them. And so, yeah, creating that balance of discipline, but also developing those tight relationships that the kids will remember and will keep them wanting to come back, you know, make them feel comfortable. Like I look back at my favorite teachers and some of them were maybe not like, if you look at the way their curriculum was designed was perfect to like best practices in education, but I learned the most from them because they had my attention and they had me kind of excited and open, excited to be there and open to whatever we were going to do.
Right.
So yeah, having that, building those relationships and keeping things interesting and fun are most important.
Thank you. And so I got a few more questions for you. In terms of your child, I remember, again, I got to be lucky to be able to spend the night at your house a lot and hang out with your family a lot. But I do remember some mornings going to junior guards with you. How big of an impact do you think something like junior guards had on you? Again, I only went a few times with you. I mean, obviously I'm not as good of a swimmer as you are, but I'm curious, how big of an impact does that type of program have on you as a kid? And do you think something like that should be offered for every kid out there? Or is that something that may be too hard for certain kids? So yeah, I'm just curious about that type of program.
Oh man, junior guards for me as a kid was probably one of the most important things I ever did. I was already in love with the ocean and in love with the water. I would have spent time in it anyways, but putting it in a curriculum-based program where we were pushed physically and we had competitions and there was, you know, we were doing like surf racing competitions against all the other areas and learning about rip currents and developing that comfort in the water, because it's all about being in the water more. The more you're in it, the more comfortable you are. The junior guard program, I can't speak highly enough about it. It's more important for kids who are scared of the ocean and aren't in the water as much. For me, I was going to be comfortable in the water regardless, but you know, the program has gotten, it's like triple the size of what it was when we were kids, probably more than that. Every kid is doing, almost every kid in the South Bay is doing junior lifeguards, and they make the kids try out. They have to come in with a swim time at a certain level, and that's a whole new thing or whole different ball game. I get to see the parents when we're doing the timing to get them into the program, like stressing out and then stressing the kid out. And But a lot of the other beaches, I did a little research before I was moving down to Carlsbad. They have a little, the tryouts are a lot easier. There's not as stringent of a time base. So yeah, to answer your question, every kid should have access to programs like that. They're invaluable and they make lifeguarding easier. Right. If you got 50 kids down on the beach and 30 of them have done junior lifeguards, I mean, your job's done.
It's definitely a public service that helps everybody on the beach and helps everyone be a little more safe as well. I had a couple more stories I'd love to dig into because I think it does play on a couple things that you mentioned. And again, I think this is something that we experienced, we got to share growing up, that I think just paints the picture of how important it is to be with a diverse group of students. And so again, I'd love to get your perspective as a professional. I think there's a couple things growing up that I remember vividly that had a big impact on me. And obviously we played a ton of sports, both in school and out of school, but there was one specific relationship that really kind of meant a lot to me. And I think it meant a lot to our whole friend group. And that was our relationship, our friendship with Rom growing up. And I don't know the exact disability that Rom had, but I mean, he still was in all the PE classes with us and we played basketball with him all the time. And I think like that's when I really remember feeling empathy for the first time and realizing, again, Rom loved basketball. He's probably the biggest Laker fan in maybe the whole state of California, but he had a disability where he couldn't play. He couldn't walk around easily and he obviously needed a lot of support. And so that was kind of the first like realization that I had that like we need to be as kind and as helpful as we can to everyone to help Rom have a great experience in PE. I think that may have changed. I don't know, would someone like Rom with that type of disability be in a general PE class now? Or would do students have an opportunity to interact in that way? Or what is your perspective now now becoming a professional in the field in terms of that experience we had growing up?
Yeah, that was a great experience for us. And something, when we look at back at our education, when we were in elementary school 20 years ago or whatever it was, we didn't even really know students with disabilities were on campus. Right. I mean, I didn't know they were there. Rom is really the only one we remember. And that's because Rom, he was super smart. You know, he just had more of an orthopedic impairment. He couldn't, you know, function physically the same way we can, but cognitively, I remember him being, you know, on par with us. And so now kids see it every day because they're most schools are more mainstream. So even my most severe kids are still in like at least one gen ed or two gen ed classes a day, and they're more mainstreamed. And I think kids, and that's one area we've come so far with in the last couple decades, is creating this more opportunities for students with disabilities. And it is so important. And for those kids to be in the class, because, you know, you want kids. So we put kids in classes based on their abilities, right? Once they get into high school, they're in higher level math. And that's super important because it helps them push the curriculum and push, but there's such a more important learning part or aspect of having kids of every different physical and cognitive ability in certain classes. And it's perfect for the art settings, for the music settings, for the even for physical education, because it does it exactly. It teaches empathy and it teaches kids like, hey, you know, when you're young, you live in that bubble of what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes.
Right.
And so you don't realize until you're with someone who you see who's has a lot more struggles than you. And I mean, those lessons are invaluable. Just like you said, you remember 30 years later. Come a long way in that regard.
That's great to hear. And I think hopefully school continues to go in that direction in terms of opening up opportunities for everybody and kind of equalizing the playing field a little bit. I know it's tough. You've already mentioned it, that socioeconomic gap that is, again, especially during COVID, is extremely hard to bridge.
Sure, yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot of other systematic issues that we're going to have to figure out to move forward. So yeah, so I'd love to get some like kind of rapid fire questions here at the end, just based on your experience and what you kind of imagine. So in terms of your experience going through the education system, what is something that you hope gets changed and that your future kids never ever have to experience that you had to go through growing up and going through the education system?
I hope my kids are pushed more than I probably was. And maybe it was probably a problem with the system as well, but I definitely navigated a lot of the waters through finding the easiest possible outlet and cheated a little bit when I had to. And so I would like to see my kids learn more about the learning process and less about filling in the blank or choosing A, B, C, or D, you know? So I want my kids to be excited about learning less about the product, more about the process.
Right. That's awesome. And what is one thing in your education experience that you hope they do get to experience? Like, what is kind of your highlight that you hope continues for the next foreseeable future?
I hope that high school sports can continue to be a big aspect of the educational institutions, because it was invaluable to my learning in high school and all my experience. I mean, invaluable socially, confidence, structure, hard work, balancing my schoolwork with my athletics. I really hope high school sports doesn't get overtaken by, you know, money or greed or club athletics. That's probably number one for me.
Yeah, that's great. And I still remember, again, going to your water polo games and screaming from the stands right before a football game or something. So that was definitely an amazing experience for me as a fan, getting to cheer you on as well.
Think about that camaraderie. You got like the water polo kids and the football kids, and everyone's playing sports and supporting each other. That's the best, man.
Yeah. Hopefully we can find a way to, I know high school sports have been on the decline a little bit, like you said, because of club sports and because of all the politics and everything that goes along with it. And so, yeah, hopefully that is something that our kids get to experience in whatever form they're going to exist in the next 10 years or so. So one last question, if you could imagine like anything being possible, what do you hope in the next decade or two when your kids go through school, what do you hope is new for them that they get to experience that you never did and that doesn't currently exist today?
I would love to see, we're dreaming right now?
Oh yeah, we're dreaming.
in a good dream, I would love to see some sort of class or curriculum where the kids are in small groups working from the beach, even doing lessons on the beach, mixing in physical activities of surfing and things like that, and then also coming in and doing regular mathematics and learning about science or biology and from their local, whatever's happening around them. Like I could talk about the marine life around this area, but I mean, the same would go for, I don't know, in Maryland or wherever you are, in Colorado, if you're near the mountains, like a little more outdoor instruction, real world based.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think that's definitely something I would love to see as well. And hopefully we can figure out a way to make happen in terms of these small group learning environments, a lot more flexible, a lot more outdoors, and just bringing in the local community a lot more, because there is so much expertise out there that we aren't really leveraging that I think we can hopefully find a way to do. Well, this is awesome. Thank you, Riley. Your expertise is amazing. I think you gave us a lot of amazing information and insights that we can use during this time and in the future.
Yeah, I hope I wasn't too negative in terms of the COVID stuff and the online stuff, but just kind of the reality right now. But yeah, we'll find new ways to connect with kids and always evolving, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you will do an amazing job for your kids, and they're lucky to have you. And so I think it's going to be an awesome school year for you as you adapt and you move down to the new pad down in Carlsbad.
Yeah. Fired up.
Nice. Well, thanks again, and we'll talk soon.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Learning Pod Network. If you'd like more information about our offerings and services, please go to www.impactconnections.org. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at ImpactConnectED. We will also be releasing our weekly newsletter called Teaching Tuesday every Tuesday, where you'll get a summary of all of our latest information and resources that we have found as we explore the best practices of learning pods in education during COVID-19. So thank you, and we hope you'll join us next week.
Take care, be well, and teach together.